This past week featured the Senate Judiciary Committee holding confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. There was the expected injection of politics, posturing, theatrics during the hearings. So through all that, how much was actually learned about Judge Jackson? Are there maybe any allegations which wound up having facts to support them that were shared? Here with his analysis of these hearings is the Assistant General Counsel and Barbara K. Olson Legal Counsel at the Landmark Legal Foundation, Michael O'Neill. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And you find more about the Landmark Legal Foundation, the website landmarklegal.org. Is it a fair, I guess, overview to say, as far as Judge Jackson is concerned, that would Ronald Reagan have nominated her for the Supreme Court? No, too liberal.
Certainly.
Would Barack Obama have nominated her to the Supreme Court? No, not liberal enough.
Well, I think she is going to be liberal. I think she's going to fit into that slot of the liberal justices on the Supreme Court. You know, keep in mind, she is filling the slot of Stephen Breyer, who is a reliable liberal left-leaning vote on the court. There's currently configured, there are three reliable liberal votes, Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor, and I think she is going to fit into that mold. One of the big takeaways, however, is what she said when describing her methodology. Now, the senators pressed her to describe her philosophy. In other words, how she approaches cases, the decision-making process she undertakes in evaluating cases that come before her. She refused to use the term philosophy. She described instead as a methodology. And when she was describing her methodology, it was interesting in that a lot of the terms she used were terms that are derived from a conservative judicial principle philosophy. So she described her methodology in terms of originalism. She said that she did not believe that the Constitution was a living document. She believes in textualism. She believes the words should be assigned the meaning that they were affixed when they were written. So that means she would believe in an original interpretation of the terminology in the Constitution. She would stick to the text. She is limited to the text. She also was she said that her judicial methodology was also based on humility and not inserting her personal preferences into her decision-making process. So what can you take from that? I could take from a big picture of this. Conservative principles have won the day in the court of public opinion. Look, we have a judge nominated for the Supreme Court by a Democrat president. We have Democrats controlling the Senate. And we have the nominee filling a liberal seat, so we know where she's coming from when all the chips are when everything is kind of brought together, when she's going to be sitting in court. But when everybody in the country is watching her confirmation hearings in the harsh, glaring light of public opinion, even a judge nominated for the Supreme Court by a Democrat with the Democrat Senate will still sound or espouse conservative judicial principles. And I think that is a win for originalism and a win for judicial conservative principles.
Almost sounded like she was channeling Antonin Scalia for that period of time. Was that an effort on her part, too? Because the belief is, at least at this point in time, Republican votes in her favor in the full Senate are pretty much down to Romney, Murkowski, and Collins.
Is
that her attempt to throw out the welcome mat and the red carpet for them to walk in and say, without any consequences, well, she's working well with what I believe in?
I don't want to give you too lawyerly an answer, but possibly. I really do think that the American people wouldn't stand for somebody sitting in that chair over the course of two or three days of hearings and saying she or he is an activist judge, they believe in a living constitution, they believe that the terminology in the Constitution is valuable. I just don't think that that holds any sway with the American people now. I think in this regard, there's a lot of, you know, you're fighting a battle of ideas here and conservative versus liberal. I think in this regard, I would say at this point in time, with regard to judicial philosophy, conservatives have won the day. And this has been a decade-long process. Keep in mind that these principles have been espoused really really kind of came to, as you said earlier, kind of came to the light with Justice Antonin Scalia and how he was describing his approach to cases and his judicial philosophy. And that's back in the 80s we're talking about. So this is something that has kind of conservative movement, if you will, has worked on for decades. And I think we can really kind of, at this point in time, declare victory that when it comes to the approach a judge or a justice on the Supreme Court should take, or at least how they're going to publicly voice that approach, it really comes down to judicial conservative principles, originalism, textualism, fixed meaning to the Constitution.
So Michael O'Neill, Assistant General Counsel, and Barbara K. Olson, Legal Counsel with the Landmark Legal Foundation, landmarklegal.org. is a website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Watching the hearings, too, even for the layperson trying to, you know, branch out from having your legal experience being repeats of Law and Order, you probably, one of the great lessons you learned about is all the sentencing guidelines a single judge is at least exposed to, not mandated to follow, but guided by. The fact versus the accusations, how different were they, how wide apart were they, or was there some justification to the accusations regarding Judge Jackson?
I think it was a fair question and a fair road to go on by the senators. I think when you're sitting in that chair, I think my personal opinion is there are things that are off, there are things that are out of bounds, and there are things that are in bounds. And I think questioning Judge Brown Jackson about her record as vis-a-vis sentencing of people in of defendants who come before her in child pornography cases is certainly well within the bounds of reasonability. But you did see, I think the Democrats played it a little bit, you know, were a little bit disingenuous when they withheld documents, probation documents that they had that they didn't open up to the Republicans on the committee. Of course, that's really unfair, and that should be talked about as being really despicable, honestly. It should be an open record that everybody has access to. And I think dropping records and withholding records is just dirty pool. I think you did get to see some of the factors that a district court judge has to consider when sentencing these heinous crimes. We were illuminated into all of the factors that go into it. Was it ultimately enough to derail her nomination? Certainly not. But I think it was a fair line of questioning, and I think it definitely demanded answers.
Plus, if you look at studies done by the U.S. Sentencing Commission, it's not unusual for anyone convicted of possession, not transporting or distributing, but just possession, of more frequently getting the lesser end of the sentencing recommendations and even below them. And I think another lesson that came out of all this, too, is why is there such a gap between possession of, distributing of, really the same vile material?
And I would come back to you saying that who is in charge of writing the sentencing guidelines and then ultimately setting the rules for these judges to follow? I think it does bring to the forefront the fact that those sentencing guidelines need to be looked at again, that Congress might need to take up the issue to distinguish, especially in the Internet age. So there's a whole host of issues that kind of came to the forefront when talking about all of the guidelines vis-a-vis child pornography cases and all the heinous issues that come before these judges having to deal with. So I think that really is an important issue, and it was important that was talked about in the hearing.
What was something that you were hoping to hear more about from Judge Jackson, but it was either not approached by a member of the committee, or she avoided answering it if it was approached?
Of course. Well, there's certain times when you just want to say, answer the question, for heaven's sake. I mean, the question from Senator Blackburn in Tennessee that everybody hears about now, the question about a biological woman. I mean, come on. We can answer. You just want to say answer that question. But I think what it says, though, was it's really, and this is sad and tragic. I want to believe that, of course, she would define a woman just like every common sense American would define a woman, and that she didn't answer the fact that she didn't answer that question really says to me, look how beholden these folks are to the radical agenda of the left. That we've gotten to the point where you can't even answer the most basic question posed to you for fear of upsetting the left-wing radical elements of your base, and that you're beholden to that. So I think that was just kind of part of me says, come on, answer the question, for heaven's sake. And I think the American people want to hear that, too. I think the overwhelming majority of the American people, if Judge Brown Jackson had answered that, like any normal person would answer that, would say, good for you, that's fine, I don't get upset about it. But the fact that she had to hedge and not answer the question because maybe 3% or 4% of the people who control the Democrat Party would get upset about it is just insane in my perspective.
In a little preview, when she makes the court and her experience on the bench as well, she has made rulings that have probably angered people in the past, so it shouldn't be something foreign to her.
Right, and that's just par for the course. Again, keep in mind, she's going to fill a slot from Stephen Breyer's slot, a reliable liberal slot. It's going to be, one thing is going to be interesting is to the extent to which she moves the ball in criminal justice matters here. You know, the Supreme Court, when they take these cases, these are national cases that affect national policy. That's the difference between the district and the circuit court judges who only affect their given jurisdictions. So it will be interesting, given her background as a public defender, given her background in the criminal justice system, what she's going to do to move the ball maybe to the left in some of criminal justice matters. I don't know, you know, again, I don't know whether she's going to be a deciding vote or a swing vote. At this time now, she is strictly in that three-justice minority, but we will have to see how that plays out. In all likelihood, she will serve for decades on the Supreme Court, only 51 years old. You're looking at easily 20 to 30 years, so who knows in the long term how that's going to play out. Her tenure presumably will be very long, but right now, in the immediate future, she is going to be one of three justices.
And as we've seen, especially in recent history, too, a lot of times who a president thinks they're nominating turns out to be different when they actually get on the bench. So,
well, that's I will put a little proviso on that is we always see Republican nominees move to the middle or the left.
Yes,
we rarely see Democrat. Now, I don't think we are. I mean, if you could pull a name, because I can't off the top of my head, if you could pull. Maybe back in the 50s, maybe like Hugo Black or somebody, if you really want to go back. But you can't see any of these Democrat nominees go to the middle. It's very rare when you see that in this day and age.
I want to learn more about the work of the Landmark Legal Foundation and this issue that we talked about here, how they're putting a focus on it, landmarklegal.org. He is their assistant general counsel and Barbara K. Olson legal counsel, Michael O'Neill. Sir, thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure, Chris. It's great being with you.